welcome back to the second part of our interview with Marshall Goldsmith. We continue our discussion around Marshall's new book, The Earned Life, which helps us live our own lives, not someone else's version of them. We also discuss several practical lessons from Marshall's extensive life experiences, as well as his years of personal and professional coaching. The wealth of content and learnings that Marshall shares today are so powerful and applicable to today's leadership challenges. This is certainly one of my favorite leadership discussions. So get comfortable and get ready to let go and lead. Marshall, we wrapped up our first episode around how results really don't define us, and that the key is learning to find peace and happiness now. That's so profound. And yet in the corporate world, we talk about achievement all the time through the lens of results. How do you coach leaders to better lead their teams to achieve, but also to be happy?
Well, John Wooden, speaking of results, I went to UCLA when he was a basketball coach. He's the most winning basketball coach in history, won 11 national championships. He never focused on results or winning, ever. You know what he said? Do your best. He said, if you do your best and win, be proud. If you do your best and lose, be proud. And if you don't do your best, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. You have nothing to be proud of. Coach K, the coach at Duke, just retired. Player hits the shot, jumps up and down, cheers. What's he say? Next play. Player misses a shot, sad. What's he say? Next play. Be where you are. Now, let me give an analogy of results. The story of the golfer, the parable of the golfer and the beer can. The golfer is on the 18th tee, getting ready to hit the shot. Got a chance to win his little club championship for the first time. He's all excited. In front of him, noisy people, drinking, very bad, distracting. He said, what idiots. But he breathed, calmed down, hits the beautiful shot. Looks perfect. Something happens. It goes in the rough. He walks toward the ball. What's he see? A beer can. The idiots in front of him have left a beer can, and his ball has hit the beer can. What's a golfer need to do? Breathe. Forget about the shot. Forget about the idiots in front of him. Forget about the results. Forget about winning the tournament. Forget about all that stuff. Hit the shot in front of you. Hit the shot in front of you. You see, when we're fixated on results, we're not hitting the shot in front of us. We're not hitting the shot in front of us. It's good to have targets, by the way. It's good to have something you're shooting for. On the other hand, if you're dreaming about that, you're not hitting the shot in front of you. And by the way, you can't win. Let me give an example. National Football League, disaster. National Football League, 5-10 years later, bankrupt, divorced, depressed, suicidal. They have so many problems. Why? They're living in the past. They're living when the guy, the drunk guy next to me in the bar, he didn't win Super Bowl III. Some young kid version of him won Super Bowl III. He's still living in that dream. You can't do that. You've got to let that go and live your own life today. Alan Mulally, by the way, he certainly achieved results. You know what he said? Believe in the process. He had a really clear process every day, every week, the same process over and over and over. I mean, my coaching, I get results. On the other hand, I set goals. I don't get paid if I don't hit these goals. The reality is, though, they don't achieve the goal because they look at the goal. They achieve the goal because they work on the process.
How would you advise leaders who are leading a team that have goals that they're struggling to meet? You mentioned focusing on the process would be one of them.
It's a great idea. You know what you do? Alan Mulally, the greatest leader, you know, of our decade, probably. Every week you stand up and you report red, yellow, green. You got problems, you publicly address them. You share them with the team, and you talk about what you're going to try to do to help them. Let me tell you what I did over COVID. Over COVID, each one of these 60 people every weekend would stand up and talk about their week. And they'd say, here's what I feel good about. Here's what I feel bad about. And they asked for help. everyone would ask for help, and we practiced something called feed forward. How does feed forward work? You ask for help, people give you ideas, and you know what you say? Thank you. You don't judge and critique. You just say thank you. Well, over and over and over again, we did this all throughout COVID, and people love it. One of the guys in our group was Mike Kaufman. Mike's the CEO of Cardinal Health. You know what Mike said? I love this process. Why? Number one, he is accountable. Every week he stands up and talks about what he did. And number two, he's not being judged, though. He's not being put down. Nobody's critiquing him. It's just nice to feel supported. The other thing is people are lonely. You know the old saying, it's lonely at the top? It used to be lonely at the top. It is lonelier at the top today. It is really lonely up there. Why? Social media. I mean, people are afraid to say anything.
Also, I think leaders are becoming concerned about disagreeing and seeming disagreeable.
Right.
Versus being able to disagree in a constructive way. How do you manage that?
Well, Peter Drucker really taught me what I consider to be the keys to that. And this is, I mean, I'm very privileged. I got ranked number one leadership thinker in the world. My intellect compared to him was that of a 10-year-old. I was on the Peter Drucker advisory board for 10 years, so I got to spend quite a few days with him. And he taught me so many valuable lessons. One of the best lessons he ever taught me is this, and if everyone listens, learns nothing but this lesson, you're going to be better at influencing people, agreeing, disagreeing. You're going to have a happier life. Are we ready? The first part of the lesson is this. Our mission in life is to make a positive difference, not to prove how smart we are and not to prove how right we are. We're not here on earth to prove we're smart or right. We're here to make a positive difference. Number two, every decision in the world is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that. Not the smartest person, the best person, a fair person, a good person. Decisions are made based on one and only one variable, power. Whoever has the power to make the decision makes the decision. Learning point three, if I need to influence you to make a positive difference in the world and you have the power to make the decision, there is one word to describe you. That word is called customer. There is one word to describe me. That word is called salesperson. Customers never have to buy. Salespeople have to sell. You sell what you can sell. You change what you can change. If you can sell it, you sell it. If you can change it, you change it. And if you cannot sell it and you cannot change it, you take a deep breath. Let it go. Let it go. And if you can't live with it, leave. That's about life. Now, how do I deal with disagreement? First, let's assume you're my boss and you have the power. You're the decision maker. I'm a salesperson. I present my case like a good salesperson in a positive way. I sell to your needs. I don't sell to my needs. I listen. I'm sensitive. I'm respectful. And I sell what I can sell. And that's going to give me my best chance. I don't judge you. I don't put you down. Now, let's assume the opposite. Let's assume I disagree with you and I'm the boss. I have the power. How do I do that? Very simply. Let's assume it's a big deal. If it's not a big deal, I'd say just agree with you. If it's a big deal, and I really can't just agree, and I can't just say thank you, how do I deal with this disagreement? Very simply, I listen to you, and I say, you know what? You want to do X for the following reasons. Is that correct? I want to make sure I've understood you. You say, exactly. I say, I've thought a lot about it. I want you to do Y for the following reasons. You say, you know, Marshall, I disagree. I said, I understand you disagree, and you've given me some really good reasons why you disagree, and I've thought about it. You may be correct. I still want you to do this for the following reasons. You say, Marshall, I think you're wrong. I say, I might be. You could well be right, and I may well be wrong. You're a very smart person. In this case, we just disagree, and this is a decision that I've chosen. And I'd like you to do your best to implement this decision in the best way you possibly can, as opposed to, let me point out to you why you're wrong and why I'm right. You don't have to beat people over the head. The decision maker makes the decision. If you're the decision maker, make the decision. And also realize, let's assume, let me give me the benefit of the doubt in this case study. Let's assume there's an 80% chance I am right. You might say, good decision. There's a 20% chance you're right. You don't know how things are going to work out. Back to results. The results may indicate your strategy would have been much better. I don't know that in advance. All I can do is make my best decision, make peace, and move on.
Yeah, we see in a lot of engagement studies, that's one of the things that like people most want is somebody to make the decision, to listen and consider, but make the decision. One thing I was really curious about is, you know, we keep hearing people talk about the difficulties of leading in an increasingly complex, fast-moving environment. But do you feel that's true, or do you think leaders have always been dealing with complexity?
I think it's true. Leaders have always been dealing with complexity, but nothing like now. On the other hand, I'm going to share something that Rob Nail taught me, who was head of Singularity University. It's a very profound thought. The pace of change you're experiencing today is the slowest pace of change you will ever experience for the rest of your life. The pace of change that you're experiencing today is the slowest pace of change you will ever experience for the rest of your life. It's not going to slow down. Look at the evolution of human beings. It's not going to slow down. It's only going to speed up. Don't whine about it. Don't complain about it. Make peace. That's the world.
What do you think is now required of leaders that wasn't required even 10 years ago?
I did a study on that question. The leader of the future as opposed to the leader of the past, and five factors came up. And they're different. One is global thinking. More and more leaders, you have to think globally, not locally. And over the centuries, leadership used to be very provincial. It used to be the cave, maybe the village, then the town, maybe the region, the state, the country. Most leaders I work with have to think globally, very different. Number two, they have to be able to understand different people and cultures. So diversity doesn't just mean people in the United States. Diversity means people around the world, which is a very different thing. Then the next thing you need to do is what's called technological savvy. Leaders can no longer hide from technology. You don't have to be a technologist, but you need to know how technology impacts your part of the business. There is almost no business anymore that you don't have to understand the impact of technology. Then number four is building alliances and partnerships. More and more leadership is not top down. It's across, it's horizontal, it's vertical. It's all different directions. And why? You no longer manage. Look at a pharmaceutical company. They have to have partnerships with everybody. The old IBM had no partnerships, and they were very proud of that. Today, IBM is nothing but partnerships. And then finally, Peter Drucker said the leader of the past knew how to tell, the leader of the future knows how to ask. Well, leadership, if I know more than you, I can't tell you what to do and how to do it. We're in a stable environment. I know how to do it. I know more than you. I can explain it to you. That's okay. It works fine. But the problem is today, people manage knowledge workers. You know more than me. Well, when we manage knowledge workers, which everyone I coach manages nothing but knowledge workers, you can't tell them what to do and how to do it. They know more than you. If the CEO knows more about marketing than the marketing function, more about communications than the communications person, more about HR than the HR person, the CEO does not have a leadership problem. They have a selection problem. They have the wrong staff. You want them to know more than you. You can't know more than all of them and be a CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company. You don't want to be. Well, you need to learn to ask, to listen, to follow up. You can't just sit there and tell people what to do and how to do it anymore. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense, of course. And, you know, as we're seeing more female leaders rising up to positions of power, what do you see as the difference, or do you see a difference?
Oh, definitely. And the world's expert on women in leadership is Sally Helgeson, my wonderful friend. And we wrote a book called How Women Rise. I love that book. That book is the most popular book about women in leadership, I think, published in the last 5 years. It has been a globally huge success. It's already sold, closing in on 200,000 copies. And by the way, I love it because we get no negative feedback from the right wing or the left wing. Very tough Write a book on leadership, get no negative political feedback. Not so easy. What we talk about, well, let me say we. 80% of that book is Sally Helgeson, and 20% of that book is me. So I want to be clear, she carried the ball on this book. On the other hand, I helped a little bit. Well, I'm really proud of it. I would highly recommend that to any women who are listening right now. I love that book. And what does it talk about? I want to connect that book with my book, The Earned Life. Okay, you ready? Here's the connection. In my book, The Earned Life, I talk about the importance that credibility must be earned twice. And what does that mean? Credibility must be earned twice. One, you have to do a good job and be credible. And two, you have to be recognized for doing a good job. So one of the things I talk about is, are you trying to prove yourself too much or too little? Now, my book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, most of that book is about people proving themselves too much. I refer to that as overselling. Adding too much value is trying to prove yourself too much, winning too much. Same thing, overselling. My book, How Women Rise, is the opposite. A lot of that book is about people who undersell. They don't promote themselves enough. They don't promote their careers enough. And by the way, for all any women listening who may undersell, and women tend to undersell more than men, this is not a theory. This is a well-documented fact. The average woman is seen in 360 feedback as a better leader than the average man. The average woman has one issue much more than the average man. Women tend to be harder on themselves. When I coach women, usually the first thing I say is, don't be so hard on yourself. Now, for men, I say there's bad news and good news. The bad news is we're not as good. The good news is we don't care. They're not as good, but they don't care. Well, with women, and some men too, undersell. Now, here's my advice for the underseller. And by the way, I've done these podcasts where people actually send in comments, and I say, do a survey. How many of you oversell and how many undersell? 75% of the people undersell. So I say, all right, you undersellers, I'm going to ask you three questions. This is going to go back to the Peter Drucker comment. I love this. Are you ready? Question number one, if you became more powerful and influential, would the world be worse off or better off? And usually, you know what people say? Better off. I say, good, the world would be better off. And we're here to make a positive difference. That's what we're here for. Very good. Number two, do you ever feel uncomfortable trying to become more powerful and influential, uncomfortable in promoting yourself? Invariably, yes. Question three, what's more important to you, making the world a better place or being comfortable?
I love that.
What's more important? Well, if what's more important is being comfortable, then don't worry about it. If you're trying to make the world a better place, get uncomfortable. Get over it, which is great coaching for people that tend to undersell. Yeah, get over it. Get over it, yeah. So, yeah, it is an interesting dynamic of overselling versus underselling. And again, the correct answer is you're selling to the level you need to sell to make a difference, not more, not less. And by the way, like the Alan Mulally point, he always said, if I'm not the expert, why am I speaking at all? I'll probably do more harm than good. Shut up. Well, don't add value. Don't try to prove yourself when there's no point to it. So, again, proving ourselves is not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just, is the world better because I'm doing this or not? If the answer is yes, it's a good thing. If the answer is no, it's a bad thing.
How do you really think about all the conversation that's happening right now about DE&I and well-being and mental health in the workplace? Do you have any thoughts you'd want to share with our listeners on that?
I'm going to share something that's completely different. All right. I went to a presentation at the National Academy of Human Resources, and they talked about the concept of employee engagement. And these were three, I'm a fellow of this National Academy of Human Resources, right? And these are three heads of HR, and they talk about everything they know about employee engagement. They talk about empowerment, training. It's all stuff I've been hearing 30 years. I heard this stuff over and over, same stuff, nothing new. 100% of the dialogue was, what can the company do to engage you? And 0% was, what can you do to engage yourself? Well, I'm listening to this and thinking these people are missing half of an equation. I'm flying on a flight. One flight attendant's positive, motivated, upbeat, enthusiastic. One's negative, bitter, angry, and cynical. They're in the same plane, same pay, same employee engagement program. What's the difference? It's on the inside, not the outside. Well, I shared this with my daughter, Kelly, and that's when we came up with the idea of active, not passive questions. My daughter's a professor at Vanderbilt. She has a PhD from Yale. She knows more about research than I do. And Kelly said, get people to ask questions that begin with, did I do my best to? So they learn to focus on themselves. And that's where we came up with the six questions. Rather than saying, did the company give me clear goals? Did I do my best to set my own goals today? Rather than saying, did the company help me achieve my goals? Did I do my best to make progress today? Instead of, did they do something to make me happy? Did I do something to make me happy? Instead of, did they give me meaning? Did I strive to find meaning myself? Instead of saying, well, gee, do I have a friend at work? Did I do my best to build relationships? Was I the friend? And instead of saying, did they make me engaged? Did I engage myself? Well, this is something you have total control over, and you don't have to wait for the company to put in an engagement program. Now, I'm not saying that companies shouldn't do that stuff. I think companies should do that stuff. On the other hand, most of our listeners, you're not controlling the company anyway. You're not in control of the company. You are in control of yourself. And by the way, our research on this, and again, send me an email, I'll send you an article about it. Our research on this is very compelling. What happens is if you do that, happiness goes up, engagement goes up, everything goes up. Company doesn't have to institute any program.
No, I think it's a wonderful point. And, you know, having been in the field of employee engagement now for 40 years, that's what we've always seen. And it's people who have agency and a sense of agency that are engaged and satisfied and happy versus being a victim and expecting the company to do everything.
Which they won't.
Right. Well, and they can't because every individual is different in terms of what you need.
Exactly.
Why do you think that some institutions are really scarce on leadership?
You know, I think it's hard. It's hard. It's not hard to be a leader, by the way. All you have to do to be a leader is get promoted and be in some role where you're officially a leader. It's just hard to be a good leader. And being a good leader requires a lot of work and effort. And, you know, it's different to be a leader. And, you know, I get this ridiculous question sometimes, are leaders made or born? That is such a stupid question. You know, every leader I've ever met, I can say in a very simple and unqualified way, every leader I've ever worked with in my life has been born. Yes, they have been, 100% of them have been indeed born. So they are all born. Now, the only question is, can leaders be more effective? And the answer to that is definitely yes. If leaders do the kind of stuff we talk about, follow up, they get better. And they don't get better because they just breathe and show up every day. And it's an ongoing process of involvement and work. Look, I'm proud of one thing. 30 years ago, no CEO would admit to having a coach. They would have been ashamed to have had a coach, embarrassed to have a coach. See, one thing I'm very proud of in my book, The Earned Life, you read those first six pages, those are not losers. Those are big, big winners. And they all say, every one of them stands up and says, I need help. Every one of them says, I need help. They get feedback. They try to improve. I'm so proud of that because 30 years ago, that would not have happened.
What do you think has changed with remote work and hybrid work? Are you seeing anything that is a different requirement of leaders?
Well, I think they just need to be more flexible because basically, to me, I'm not going to get into it's better or worse because, you know, we could go around that argument all day and there are other people that are far bigger experts than I am. On the other hand, it is different. It is different. And what you need to do is just be flexible and learn this is a different world. And I need to learn how to work effectively in this different world. The principles are still the same, just the application of the principles may be different.
And how are you coaching your clients with regard to that?
I typically encourage people actually to communicate more, not less. On the other hand, communicate more, but make the communication typically more frequently with less duration. People just burn out on computers after 3 or 4 hours. And you just start losing the audience very quick. So, you know, just keep it reasonably concise and to the point.
Where else do you see where communication goes wrong?
You know, I'm going to go back to the Peter Drucker point, and you've said it yourself. Part of it is just leveling with people about what's real. Now, there are four types of decisions. One is it's coming top down. Basically, the decision's already made. It's a done deal. It's not a vote. Number two is the decision's going to be top down, but you may influence it. Number three is the decision's largely made by you, but I want to be involved. And number four is it's your decision. There's nothing right or wrong about any of these. It always depends on the situation. The communications breakdown occurs when people have a gap between what's real and what's perceived. And a lot of leaders, they say, well, I'm really going to empower you and delegate until you do something I don't like. And then they start telling you exactly what to do. Well, it doesn't quite work that way. You just need to make a decision. What are you willing to let go of? And what are you not willing to let go of? And tell people the truth. And tell people, and don't expect them to be able to read your mind.
And that's, of course, the whole theme of this podcast, which is let go and lead, right? What do you think people do most need to let go of?
Oh, I'm big on letting go. And to me, let's don't talk just about leaders. Let's talk about humans, okay? Now, I'm going to say something next is designed for everybody, whether you're a leader or not. One of the things we need to learn to do is let go of our previous sins and forgive ourselves. A lot of people never do that. So in the book, one of the things I talk about is every time I take a breath, it's a new me. This is a very important Buddhist concept. Every time I take a breath, it is a new me. The me that's here today is not the same as the past me. And I give everyone a good exercise right now to really help them let go of some stuff. Take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. Now, think, every time I take a breath, it's a new me. Everything that happened before the second in your life was done by an infinite set of people. They're called the previous me's. Think of that infinite set of people, the previous you's. Think of all the gifts they've given the you that's listening to me right now. Think about all the nice things they did. And think about how hard they tried. If any group of people did that many nice things, what should you say to those good people? Thank you. Thank you. Now, did they make a little mistake or two? Let it go. The first person we need to learn to forgive is who? Ourselves. I've asked thousands of parents around the world this question. When my child grows up, I want my child to be. What's the number one answer from parents? No matter what country I'm in, by far, one word, happy. You want your kids to be happy? Want your parents to be happy? Want people to love you to be happy? Want people to work with you to be happy? You go first. You be happy. You be happy. Forgive yourself. So I think a good thing people need to learn to let go of is that, you know, and of all my LinkedIn posts, I've got 1.4 something million followers on LinkedIn. Of all my LinkedIn posts, one of the ones that's most popular said this: forgive other people for being who they are. Forgive yourself for expecting them to be someone else. Forgive other people for being who they are. And forgive yourself for expecting them to be someone else. People are not who we expect them to be. They're who they are. And when we really don't forgive people, it's because they are not who I expected them to be. And really, we're beating up ourselves. We're making ourselves feel bad. How could I misjudge that person so poorly? You know, well, you did. You're a human. Let go, let go, let go.
So, Marshall, do you have any last words of advice for our listeners?
I always finish everything with the same last words of advice. The best coaching advice anybody's ever going to get. Take a deep breath. Imagine you're 95 years old. You're just getting ready to die. Right before you take that last breath, you're given a beautiful gift. The ability to go back in time and talk to the person that's listening to me right now. The ability to help that person be a better leader and have a happier life. What advice would the wise 95-year-old you, who knows what mattered in life and what didn't and what was important and what wasn't, what advice would that wise old person facing death have for the you who's listening to me right now? Whatever you're thinking now, do that. In terms of performance appraisal, that's the only one that's going to matter. That old person says you did the right thing, you did. That old person says you made a mistake, you did. You don't have to impress anyone else. Some friends of mine interviewed old folks who are dying, got to ask this question. What advice? Personal side, three themes. Theme one, be happy now. Not next week, not next month. Get out of that I'll be happy when. We all have the same when. That old person looking at death, that's called when. We all got the same win here. Don't get so busy chasing what you don't have, you can't see what you do have. Learning point number two, friends and family. Never get so busy climbing that ladder of success, you forget the people who love you. And number three, if you have a dream, go for it. Because you don't go for it when you're 35, you may not when you're 85. It doesn't have to be big, maybe small. Business advice isn't much different. Life is short. Have fun. Number two, do whatever you can do to help people. And the main reason to do that is nothing to do with money or status or getting ahead. Main reason to do that is a 95-year-old you will be proud of you because you did and disappointed if you do not. And if you do not believe this is true, interview any CEO who has retired. I've interviewed very many and ask them a question. What are you proud of? None told me how big their office was. All they ever talked about is the people they helped. And the final advice, go for it. World's changing. Do what you think is right. May not win. At least you tried. At least you tried. Old people, we seldom regret the risk we take and fail. We always regret the risk we fail to take. And finally, what's my mission? My mission on our wonderful call, thank you for inviting me, is pretty simple. Hopefully help a few people listening to this call have just a little better life. And maybe if some of the listeners have a little better life and this helps them help a few other people have a little better life, is a very good use of both of our time.
Well, thank you so much, Marshall, again. And you gave us so much time. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you for inviting me.
Hope to talk to you again soon. Wow, those were some very provocative words of advice. I so much enjoyed these last two episodes with Marshall. Let's recap learnings from episode two. The five factors for leaders of the future are: one, be a global thinker. 2, understand the differences among people and cultures. Diversity doesn't just mean people in the United States. Diversity means people all around the world. 3, be technologically savvy. You need to know how technology impacts your business. 4, build alliances and partnerships. Leadership isn't top-down. It's across, it's horizontal, it's vertical, it's in all directions. 5, know how to ask. Today, we manage knowledge workers, and we need them to know more than we do. So leaders need to learn to ask, to listen, and to follow up. The days of telling people what to do and how to do it are over. And when I asked Marshall what leaders most need to let go of, he actually elevated the question to a more human and personal belief. Marshall says the first person we need to forgive is ourselves. Forgive other people for who they are, and forgive yourself for expecting them to be someone else. People are not whom we expect them to be. We can't feel bad about that. We're human. Let it go. Recapping Marshall's last words of advice, first, be happy now. Not next week or next month. Get out of the I'll be happy when syndrome. And don't get so busy chasing what you don't have that you can't enjoy what you do have. Always remember friends and family. Never get so busy climbing the ladder of success that you forget the people who love you. And have a dream and go for it. If you don't go for it when you're 35, you certainly won't when you're 85. As always, Marshall's given me much to contemplate and consider. I hope our discussions today had the same effect on you. Thank you as always for joining us today, and we'll see you soon on the next episode of Let Go and Lead.